it's both recorders, so I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman Brad Holton, I'll bring the meeting back to order. We've been in recess in between agenda items, and we have a 10:30 agenda item for DSD general business. We do have an action item first before in going into general business, and that is consider a resolution granting a refund to Freedom Forever, application PB2025-0036. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the applicant, Freedom Forever, is requesting a refund on the building permit that was applied for. The customer that was going to install solar panels decided to not go with the solar panels and withdrew their permit. The applicant is requesting a refund of unused plan review fees. Pursuant to the adopted fee schedule, 80% of the building permit fees can be refunded when no work has been done under the permit. I did verify that there were no inspections completed on this, and as such, we are recommending a refund in the amount of $424.
All right. Any discussion or questions?
I'm in favor.
I am too. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we sign the resolution granting a refund to Freedom Forever, BP2025-0036.
And I will second. And can you add the amount there, Commissioner? $424.
There you go. All right. Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Get this signed and sent down. There you go. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's start into general business.
So, Mr. Chairman, we have this morning, since code enforcement is high on everybody's mind this week, I let Joyce or Josh talk a little bit about our code enforcement efforts this year, and so I'll turn time over to him.
Okay.
Thank you. Josh Johnson, Assistant Director. I wanted to go over kind of the area these officers are covering and their current caseload. I thought it'd just be instructive. Yeah, and as Jay mentioned, it's on the top of our minds due to that tough property that we have abated at this point. So we have three officers. One of them is the supervisor, and that's Eric. Eric's the area in purple, and he covers 86 square miles, and he currently has 127 cases open. Gray areas of the cities, and obviously we're not patrolling or reacting to cases in there. Gary, he's the area in green. He's another officer, and you met Gary at the hearing on that abatement. He was not Eric. He covers 164 square miles, and he's got 253 cases. As you might imagine, the more people you get in an area, the more code enforcement, you know, the more crime too, that whole thing.
Right.
And then Katie, she's got the western part of the county, and that's around 276 square miles, and she's carrying a caseload of 105 cases. So that abatement is a good example. It's honestly kind of a time suck for our officers, because they've got to be there, really make sure the contractor's staying on task. And then the building official had to go out to look at that house, and after being inside of it and getting more familiar, he was like, yeah, we got to pull this house down too. So they've got their background caseload, and then we've got I'll call them problem properties. And when we get that, it ends up drawing a few people from the department there to assess the situation. And then Southwest District Health came out. So, and then we almost went through our whole yearly budget for abatement with that. So, and I believe Jay talked to you about that earlier, but I just want to let you guys know the hard work that these officers do. Eric came from, he's been in several jurisdictions. He also has a law enforcement background, which can be handy in this line of work.
Yep. Wow.
Code enforcement is always, they respond to complaints. They're not really out driving around looking for issues to enforce. They're complaint driven, and that's the way they come about. But even in my experience, working with different jurisdictions, Ada County only had two code enforcement officers there. Meridian code enforcement is actually in the police department. And then we have three officers here, but it really varies. There are, of course, national standards for the bigger cities, how many or different areas around the country that are suggested, and by those standards we're way underserved, but you know, we do keep up and they do a good job and we address the things that we can address and resolve. They get a lot of resolution, a lot of voluntary compliance, and sometimes it goes to the next step, and you've seen a lot of those as well. But they're good people, and we want to keep them and just kind of try to stay ahead of that. Do you have any questions or concerns?
Well, I think that the operational concern that I have is budgetary. Some of the stuff that's still laying before us is not that much more unique than what we experienced this week, which was a significant investment in mediation. So do you have thoughts that we might have to contemplate for budget?
You want me to cover that?
Sure.
I have a couple thoughts, and we had a very productive meeting with members of the treasurers and the auditor's office this week with our code enforcement staff. The intent, and I believe the track was laid for this last year by our former director, we want the abatement to be more of a revolving fund so that when somebody pays abatement, it's coming back into development services to then spend on more abatement, excuse me.
Correct.
So we talked through with those other two departments on a way to track when that money comes back in a more methodical fashion. And it's not only important to reinvest those resources in the community, it's also important so that when somebody pays off their entire abatement, we do a lien release on that. Mm-hmm. And we're on the right track for making that system better. And one way we're on the right track is, I know that the folks at facilities that abate weeds just passed a new ordinance, and I think they've got a better process, so we're going to try to adopt that. And after checking with law, we will try to get an ordinance in front of you to make that process better as well. And that's just for how we tell somebody, hey, we're going to put a lien on your property if you don't pay this or fix it. There needs to be more of a middle step, because right now we say we're going to put a lien on the property, we do it, and then in 3 days we put the lien on the property. And the way the weed process works, and I'm going off memory, so I apologize, there's more of a middle step where we're giving somebody more of a chance to pay. And that feels like a better process to me, because the 72-hour time limit to me, I don't think that's enough time to give somebody time to react to a $40,000 bill, for instance.
Yeah. And Chairman, the other part of that you talked about, it would appear that we need to, during the budget or just our interactions with the clerk's office, that revenue and expense have to be housed in the same budget. That we corrected that problem in Fleet 2 or 3 years ago, where they were, even at an auction, the vehicles were sold, but the revenue was going back to current expense instead of to the fleet budget so that they could reinvest in that. So I am completely supportive of that happening in Weed and Pest and happening in development services, because I feel like we're really gaining traction with development services, with good leadership here, and then with Eric Arthur and his team that really care about the county and are doing a very good job. So just for the record, I'm saying we need to fix whatever process that is not returning the revenue stream back to where the expense originated.
Yeah, one solution, and I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, but we're looking at creating a special revenue line item for abatement so we can see when the money comes back and then get a parcel number where we can look, okay, they've paid it all off. We
mm-hmm.
So
yep. That's really important.
Because abatements could be a bottomless pit, because you never know what you're going to run into from year to year. You know, we created a $50,000 budget last year, and then but you don't know until you get an abatement that it goes a long way. We just kept discovering things this week that needed to be hauled off, and that's troublesome. We're halfway through the year and you know, we don't anticipate that we're gonna have to have more, but you know, it's hard to figure. So we'll look at our budget and see what we can do or what we need to do for the coming year as we sort through the budget process. But just in anticipation, we'll look at trends and what's been done in the past and how we best move forward, so.
Yeah, and to put a fine point on this, I think we do need to increase the base fund because to me it's like seed money. The auditor's office sent me this tracking report through the years, and you can see the tax collected, that's somebody paying off their abatement. And right now from 2011 through 24, we're still owed about $29,000. So, yeah, you can see some comes back and some doesn't out of that total, so.
If we could at least recoup the majority, it'd be best to put it back into the account that we continue to draw from. So less of a budget hit that way as well going forward. So we, you know, that's been anticipated, but the process hasn't necessarily been set up to make that happen. So that's in our coordination with those other two departments that we can get that in the works and get that process set up so everybody understands how it works. Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's all I really wanted to communicate, but yeah, I'm always available for questions, you know, outside of these meetings too. So.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you for the map and the caseloads associated with that. That's not only good for us, but anyone from the public that wants to see it too. Like I had no idea they had assigned areas and whatnot, so thank you.
Yeah, a significant portion of their day can be driving time, so, sure. You know, we're a huge county, so. Mm-hmm.
So I think that we just, over the last 24 months, instituted the weed and pest issue. I think there's some lessons learned. One is that any fees are going to be set by resolution. Do not put them in the ordinance. And then that be able to demonstrate administratively what the time and the cost is and what level of employee, and be clear to differentiate when a higher level employee is absolutely needed and it cannot be argued that a clerical employee could have done the job. And I think that's very easy to demonstrate and to defend. The other thing is that I'm thinking out loud, but I'm thinking you may need to create a pool of contractors who can do the work, and that pool rotates and is not prejudicial to one contractor. It's we do the same thing with the Idaho State Police has a list of towing companies who tow away the issue that's wrecked on the side of the road or whatever it happens to be. We need to do that to protect both those contractors and ourselves, that there isn't a prejudicial system that's working against the situation or the property that we're having to deal with. So there's just several things there that I'm looking forward to doing that right, because, again, I don't want my retired little old lady helping fund cleanup on somebody's property that should have been taken care of by the value of the property. So,
Chairman, can I ask a question based on your comments? Didn't we do some kind of an evaluation for contractors or no? With some of these, I think there's specificity because law enforcement sometimes potentially needs to be involved, and they may not necessarily be set up for that, or volume, or Jay looks like he has an answer.
So part of we do have a list of three contractors. They vary in expertise or you know, capability of the scope of the project. But I think in my experience working within the purchasing statutes and purchasing rules for the state and the municipal subdivisions, counties, what have you, that in order to play within those rules, it may behoove us to actually do kind of an RFP and create a task order with a group of contractors for abatement purposes or what have you, so that when an incident comes up, then we have a list to draw from, and it keeps us within purchasing rules. We're always concerned with, you know, if a project scope like this one grew overnight by the process of discovery, that we then don't get into a situation where now we've exceeded that $50,000 or whatever the limit of a contract.
And it's gone up. And I toyed with whether we needed to have our attorney Wesley here in the meeting, but suffice it to say that the legislature has chose to raise that significantly, so we're not underneath the 50K.
Right. I knew that was proposed, and I hadn't tracked it to see if it actually happened.
It did happen. So
that's a benefit, but I think it would still behoove us to have a task order. That way we would have standing contracts with
right
contractors that we could rotate through.
Right. Because it's going to take these type of contractors are just not anybody who's going to answer the call.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and scheduling, if we need somebody out there in short order, it's good to have three to draw on instead mm-hmm. of one, something right. like that. So,
and like
blind luck that this person was available on Monday.
Right, right. And it's also important that, you know, if we have, like we just did, like my count might be wrong, but I think we had five entities basically that were there on site, had to be there on site at the same time. That's a lot of coordination. And yeah. That doesn't come cheap with our manpower, our time. So,
exactly. I do want to commend Eric for reaching out and coordinating with the agencies as well as the group of lien holders on this particular property, that right. they're aware of the work that's going on and what's going to cost them.
Right.
So what they're going to play within as well.
Right.
Chairman?
Yes.
Why I need to say this, I don't know, but the chart that's been provided for us on the difference on collection is not a loss to the county. At some point in time, the county will realize that either through a tax deed or through the sale of a property. So it's really, I guess, a deferred revenue stream for us, but it takes time to recoup that sometimes.
Yeah, and that's why to build this fund up to an operational level is going to take quite a few years. And so you can't count on the returning money.
It looked like, Josh, did you have something to add to that?
Oh, I think I already said that budget time, we are going to ask for more than the 50K we asked for last year. I think that's safe to say. And, you know, I'm of the opinion it never hurts to ask. So,
yeah. And
if you would talk to Kyle and tell him that we're needing to basically, we're having to set up a revenue rotating, I can't think of the term at the moment, whatever term he wants to call it, but we're going to have to call this budgetary amount out separately. It kind of becomes its own animal.
Yeah, kind of like an operating line where you expense and then return.
Revolving something fund.
Mm-hmm.
So
that meeting we had this morning. So I think maybe the way we're setting it up is going to get you where you want to go.
Perfect. All right.
Yeah. And I would say too, Chairman, that when we started, that like code enforcement was completely neglected. So we've come a long way in terms of what we're doing. And today to have a fund where we can actually process abatements is really a great step. And I think what we said last year during the budget process is that we would have to test the waters and see where we're more active in code enforcement, whether or not 50,000 was enough. But whatever the lag time is on this, I think it's bearing out that it's not sufficient. And in some of those areas, like where Officer Phillips is at, sometimes the rural areas are more costly because nobody is really out there and they're depositing or they're doing things that become then really problematic and expensive to abate. So it's an ongoing challenge.
Well, and just so we can set it up correctly, because it messes with our budget,
mm-hmm.
because basically we have to have the revolving fund 100% ready to be expended.
Mm-hmm.
We also have anticipated income that might also be expended too during the same year. So it makes for the public a little bit more challenging to try to understand what really is there and what is theoretical. Okay. Perfect.
We just wanted to have this conversation in preparation of preparing a budget and letting you know kind of what we're working then and what we're working towards.
So. Perfect. So I see we signed blue sheets on. Oh, go ahead.
No. I'm just glad it's getting brought up.
Okay. Can you kind of go over what the new hires are and how that could be impacting?
So what, commissioners, what happened was, of course, when you elevated me to, appointed me to the director position, then I needed a backfill. We took two principal planners, and Josh being one of them as assistant, and with Dan being the plan manager, I lost two principals. So then we elevated Emily into a principal position from an associate. I still had one to fill. That meant I had another associate to fill. The GIS analyst, we moved one of our associate planners over there because she has a background in GIS. So it was a good fit. So we moved her over there. I needed two associates and a principal. What you signed today fills those three positions. Some of them I'm familiar with from other agencies that they have worked with over the years, in the past few years. So that's helpful, made that decision a whole lot easier. They have a planning background as opposed to many times we'll hire an associate on potential because they have the skills, but they don't, you know, they don't know what they don't know. So training will be a whole lot easier and quicker. The only opening I have currently in our offices is the permit supervisor that Fair stole.
Oh.
And so we're down to one position that we're open as all, and we're interviewing for that at present.
Yeah, I think there's only one more interview on that position right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we've got a one or two good candidates out of that pool, so.
That's good.
All of the 2024 hearing level applications have been assigned to planners and they're
really?
Jeez. So basically, it's going to take some time and to get through the hearings for those applications, basically. But by this fall, there won't be a backlog.
Wow.
That leads me to my next question. Would you be willing to have, I'll call it a land use hearing day during the budget season, or a couple of strategic ones to, I'm assuming we don't just have to wait till August when the budget's done to.
Right.
But it might be good to have a focus day or something like that. Is that a concept you'd be interested in?
Yeah, we're going to have to coordinate that with quite a few people. But we were just having the conversation before you came in, as nobody knows when our where all of these are going to start landing that have been going through PNZ. And so I guess coordinate with Greg and Monica about blocking out, because we just basically, since it was a blank sheet of paper, we basically put in a bunch of the workshops, and there's some flexibility there. There's some workshops that are scheduled for an hour that are going to take 15 minutes, but on a land use public hearing, we have to start at the time and all of that, so that's way less flexible.
Mr. Chairman, what does this workshop look like? Is this like
No, it's not a workshop. They're hearings, like your rezones and things of that nature.
Well, you're just asking if we're willing to have them during the budget season or like
we can do is
morning and afternoon kind of thing.
Yeah, like as many as we could pack into a day. And the reason I say that is so you're not going through a budget process, and this week you're doing two land use hearings, and the next week you're getting hit with one. I just wondered if you would find benefit in us focusing those more in a day-long process. Mm. Sounds like agony. I can understand that too.
Sounds like my worst night.
Yeah. And Chairman, I would be in favor of.
You know, by the time it gets to us, they vetted it through PNZ and they're ready for battle. And it's not like PNZ. They've had their one chance and they've learned. And I can't imagine timing-wise it would be the issue too, is that we've we've done follow-ups after scheduled land use hearings, and we've not been good at keeping the time. You know, we got it set for 4 o'clock, and we're still going with the earlier land thing. And I think that's really unfair to the applicants. I think that causes consternation. So by the time it gets to us, they better be our focus. They better feel like they've had a good hearing.
Okay.
We weren't double-minded about some other piece of business that we're trying to rush them through and get that done. Do you guys?
I think that's really good reasoning, because they're paying a lot of money to go through. So I would rather have them spaced, jamming them all in one day. We've done 3 in a day that were significant before you got here. It's a lot. It's hard to
keep. Still shows.
Thank you. Yeah. And so I think I would rather have them look 4 days where there is adequate space to give them the diligence that's required. And I don't think we should postpone those during the budget process. I think we just.
As an example, you put it on, I like them on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We could put the budget hearing to say that it starts between whatever 2:45 and 3:30 or 4 o'clock. That's going to incur, especially on the first go arounds on the budget, it's going to involve a lot less people and a lot less people in the gallery being here to hear that, and we could be flexible with putting that on the agenda that way.
Okay.
Within your schedules, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So how many, just in estimated numbers, how many has gone through P&Z that are in the queue to get set up to come before us? Is it 3? Is it 8? Is it 12?
100.
on your schedule already has probably just been in the past month is all. So
right.
There were 5 that went through the 1st of April. Last week there were 2 that made it through. And so, and because we're still signing findings, the findings for 3 of them were approved last week. So next week they'll approve the other 3 from the April 3rd hearing. So those are coming, but there may be 8 or 9,
okay,
that are pending right at the moment that aren't scheduled already with you. And of course we're trying to get through the hearing exam and P&Z commission with 2 or 3 or 4 a night. So
is the P&Z commission, they're not necessarily settling on their FCOs at that meeting night. Are they liking that procedurally to?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Yeah, I would think it'd have both positive and negative.
Well, part of the reason we did that is to really keep them on task with writing their findings, because we would spend staff time writing findings per our recommendation from our analysis of the staff report, and then they make a different decision, and then we're left to guess on how we change the
right
findings to support their decision. And so we pushed them off to for finalization the next week. But at each hearing, they are going through all the criteria and making a finding. And so that's why we would bring them back instead of being at the hearing itself. So we're looking at, we talked to them at the last P&Z commission hearing afterwards about how they think the process is working and if they would like to see it a little different option, and so that's what we're going to change it up. So
okay, all right,
we'll keep you posted on that.
All right, I know that we really like it on the board here that we allow a later date to review those draft to approve them. So
well, and that's even, that goes back to being in fairness to the applicant, in fairness to the public at large that attend that if we go in with, we prepare all the findings ahead of time, then the public can sometimes feel like they're just franchise because their input wasn't worked into the findings per se. But what was said in the hearing wasn't necessarily taken because we'd done it ahead of time. That was another reason that we pushed it off, so we could take that hearing and all the information, and the decision's based on that, so the findings need to reflect that.
Okay, all right.
In some regard.
Okay. In getting a little bit of pushback from engineers and a couple of the realtors, are you good with setting up the workshop for roads, for private drives? Let's get a date set for that, and we're gonna get back into time crunch on the budget hearing stuff, but if we could get that done.
Do that. Before you seriously get into the budget workshops and things, sometime in the middle, between now and the middle of May.
Okay. And be sure that we get that with Aaron Williams so he can post it on the website, invite.
If you could potentially give me a list of, and I don't have to do it at the moment, if there are some specific engineers,
yeah,
or consultants that I need to make sure are included in that, give me a list of who I need to invite.
Those. Yeah, I think that I'd be able to present probably four to five, I should probably say, pretty easily.
The right people there.
Yeah. The sooner we can figure out what date that is, the better attendance we're going to have.
I'll do that.
On, as you know, what we used to call a parcel inquiry, and the concept of pushing the research, is this an original parcel, onto the applicant through a title report. So we've just had some questions. Nobody, I would say, is very objectionable to that. One of the main comments we got is, hey, a title company calls this something different. And our comment to that person was, well, does it fulfill what we said we need out of this? Yes. Okay, well, that'll do fine. So all we're really getting right now are questions, not strong objections. So I just want to give you a quick update on that.
Thank you.
I guess we put an asterisk or whatever the title company owns the product.
Yeah.
Just have them call Zach. We'll figure it out.
I mean, how many title companies are there in the valley? My goodness, you know.
Right.
Quite a few.
These days.
But what you're getting back is it's fulfilling the need. There was some, I guess, conversation that getting something from the title company was insufficient to tie back to original parcel, but you're finding that it's working.
So I'm more talking about, there was a question from a realtor.
Okay.
The two examples you have on your application, the title company I use doesn't know what you're talking about, or I think they were kind of being absurd, I'll say. They said, or we're going all the way back to when the government, you know, did the BLM land, and we were like, no, we need a deed from 79 prior to the ordinance and what it looks like now that shows they match. I mean, that's really at the end of the day what we need from the title company.
Right.
And so I think a product they were able to purchase that met that was around $300, and it showed a chain of ownership and all the deeds between. So, I mean,
nice.
To me, that's great. And otherwise, I think what we'd have to be looking at, similar to the abatement contractors, is soliciting a few title companies, saying what we need, and the county pays for it, and we cycle through those. That's a completely different direction.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's always an option, and we could consider it at some future date, but at this point, it doesn't seem to be how we would like it to be.
Yeah. We want people to have that choice, I think.
Absolutely. It would definitely limit their choice, so I'd rather try to help the free market.
Granted, it should be the same information no matter what title company that you use. So.
Correct, yeah.
The only way I see that breaking down is if we start finding stuff and it's like, this is not right, you know what I mean? That can happen in the consulting world is, I want this to say what I want it to say. That would be a problem. I don't think we're going to get that.
Seems to me the title insurance, or not, I'm using the wrong term, that the title company would have potential liability about incorrect information. They're getting it, pretty much from same source. I mean, they just have their own files that they do, but.
Right, but what we're asking for in regards to the, from a title company for those purposes is just to show us the deed.
Yep.
We don't need title insurance. We don't need to know the easements, the liens or whatever. Just, I need a deed.
Yep.
What was the deed on record on this date? Okay, send me that, that's all. So it should be simplified. And I think there is some coordination with the title companies that I need to do.
Okay.
I mean, we do have frequently asked questions about that on our website, but I need to actually spend some time, make some calls, or sit down with the title companies and go like, this is all we're talking about. Same page.
We could have a luncheon.
I know. Chairman, I have another question. All the title companies, and this is, I'm saying this back to you, but it shouldn't matter which company they go to. They should be able to provide the same deed information no matter who it is. It's all, they have access to that information and database.
It's the same deed of record. Everybody would have the same deed.
Right. Thank you.
That's why we have a recorder's office. That's why property sales are recorded. All right. What else?
And Chairman, would you state one more time? Because, you know, I'm sitting there anticipating if I were a person applying, why can't the county do that? And we've had a lot of conversation about it because the parcel inquiries as they were $35. People complained about, okay, $40. People complained about that. And now we're saying you can go and get this, but it's now $300. So that's.
So we set up our, when we brought the fee schedule to you, there's actually an item in there that if they absolutely refuse to go get the title report, we can do that on their behalf, but they'll pay the fee for it. So as part of the application. So we're ahead of the game in that regard if we need to be.
Yeah. And the
150 now.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And the reason we stopped doing that was basically to avoid what the chairman talked about, was any bias or interpretation errors. There was, that was happening. So this outsources it, if you will, to a completely independent third party with no stake in the game, where they do this all the time.
Well, the taxpayer and paying their property taxes is not purchasing a functioning title company in development services.
Mm-hmm.
This is the issue. And so I guess I'd say on the record that I'd even like the 150 to be relooked at. I understand that there are parcels that are pretty straightforward, simple, and $150 covers that. I just would like to protect DSD staff to not get caught up in one that's convoluted and very time-consuming to figure out and have to get it done for $150. I just make sure that our fee structure is protecting us, that we're doing it fairly.
Yes, that was our commitment when we brought the fee schedule forward, was to do some tracking and make sure that.
Because we haven't been into it that many months. Yeah.
Or down for that matter.
Right. Yeah, up or down. Yeah, I agree. Just so it's applied fairly. So good. What else? So I guess we have 8 or 9 applications coming to a board near you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So I guess let us know what those potential dates are, and Greg and Monica, and they can help negotiate the time and date so that can get up and posted.
Sure.
Because we're talking all of the 45-day wait period on these anyway. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I don't think so. Thanks for the great work.
Do you guys do a luncheon or anything that the commissioners could get introduced to the new planners?
We'll invite you to the next potluck.
Okay.
Can't pay for that out of my budget, but yeah, we can arrange some. Geez, I don't, we've had birthdays after birthdays after birthdays. We have a lot of birthdays. So I'm sure we have a few in May. We usually have some sort of celebration for different things.
Okay.
We come together as a group. We don't have an all-staff meeting in May, but we do in June, planning a little bit more of an event for that.
For that.
So definitely the second week of June.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay.
So we can get to know them and see them where they're not official.
Introduce them after they get here anyways, but...
Right.
But in this setting, so you don't scare them too bad.
Well, Zach's very scary, so we'll try to protect him as best we can.
And I remember my first experience. Holy cow.
Really? Really? Shoot, I didn't do a good enough job. All right.
You've come back from it. Utmost respect. Always.
All right. Anything else?
I think that's it.
You guys have anything else?
Nope.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. I'd make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We are adjourned. Thank you.